Now, read it, please. I'm into progressive lenses. Okay, here we go. This is for the session of Promethea. We got the in fire. Eight of cups.
Which one?
What?
Fire.
Is eight of cups indolence. In water, we have the lovers. Air, two of swords, peace. Earth, the star. Now, the fifth card, hidden motivation, the fool.
So now we know where the anal sex is coming from.
Right, right, exactly. The sixth card, future outcome, is the four of discs, power. And the arc of influence is number seven, Aeon, the Aeon. Number eight, ace of discs. And number nine, knight of wands.
Now, does Aeon relate to judgment or to the world? I can't remember.
Judgment.
Judgment, okay.
It sounds like a summation reading. It really does.
Yeah.
Johanny,
you've
been amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting is how many of these cards have appeared before.
In fact, I have.
In previous readings.
Yeah, we have several new ones because what I do is I write down the reading quickly on a piece of paper, and then I go through my Toth images. What I do is I scan, every time we have a new card, I scan it. So the new cards that we've never had before, which is an interesting point, is the star, and the four of pence, or four of discs.
That's very interesting. I just finished...
The four of discs, you mean, or the four of pence?
No, four of discs in this deck. It's the four of discs.
Oh, well, that's right. Yeah, discs. Okay, I'm sorry. All right.
So, Hannah, I don't think you've had the Aeon before either, have you?
Yes, we have.
Oh. Yeah, we have. I remember having talked about that. I don't remember in what context, but yes, we've had it.
Yes, we've had it. And as we progress, you know, it's just interesting which cards we'll do a summation, right, Paul? We're going to
that. Yeah, one of the summations we'll probably do is we'll list all the cards that never appeared in any of our readings.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll list the cards in their frequency. You know, we'll probably do a thing, we'll do a frequency reading, and then we'll, and decide, depending on how often we'll say in which reading they occurred, you know, in which chapter they occurred. And then there's a variety of other ways we could do an analysis of which cards reoccurred in the what positions of our nine card reading.
And something else that I always love to look at the play of elements in the reading. I would be interested in seeing how many times in the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh piece the card that we had actually showed up in its own element, if you know what I'm talking about. Like
elementary analysis of the first four cards in terms of how many elements. You know, for instance, Star and Fire. I mean, normally Star is considered a water card.
Is it
water? No, Aquarius, it's air.
I thought it was air.
That's really a jolt in terms of consensual reality, because I was reading, it's a novel, but Peter Ackroyd brings in a lot of facts. It's called First Light, and it has to do both with archaeology and astronomy. And, you know, he gives sort of the history of Aldebaran, the big red star. It's actually bigger than our sun, yada, yada, yada. And he talks about stars and their effect on human beings and the belief systems. And it's funny that we brought up Thalass's quote, Pluto the grand winner of consensual reality. Because actually, you know, it is about consensual reality. Even our scientific theories today about what stars are made of, what stars do, et cetera, it sort of go, it's actually when, in Leastways in Peter Ackroyd's mind, it's a return to primitive concepts.
Uh-huh.
And so, anyway, I just, oh, and the aspect of Earth as being an aspect of stars.
Yeah, I would recommend, if people don't know about Peter Ackroyd as a
He's
a British writer, has slightly occult leanings, imaginative leanings. And, and the other thing is that if you go into Amazon and buy and look for his used books and go into the hardcover used books, you can pick up a lot of his older books for a
penny. Yep. And
so,
his books
so you
are
can pick them up real, real cheap, and you're building yourself. And if you read his stuff, as a historical novelist, he tends to work in accuracy, which is he's pretty accurate about what he's doing.
And he's a brilliant writer.
Yeah.
His favorite words is amazing. Acroyd, Peter Ackroyd.
He's got a lot. He's very prolific. He's done some stuff on the Renaissance stuff
There's a novel on Dr. D.
Yeah.
It's fun. I think he's written a Blake biography, a T.S. Eliot, and Dickens, and a whole. He has some novels he wrote on Chatterton. It goes on and on. Hawksmoor. I couldn't get through Hawksmoor. It's too dark for me.
Yeah,
with that cathedral building.
So there's a lot of, between Cynthia and I, we could keep you reading incessantly for the rest of your life.
Well, and the author.
Evidently, my whole neighborhood's like this. We're having a book sale for our library, and we're overflowing with books.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, the thing is that, there's so many of them that you can't keep them anymore. I mean, I have to get rid of all sorts of books I've got.
Sitting here looking at five large, kind of scary-leaning stacks of books sitting on the floor in my office because my bookshelves are full. So, I've got to do something.
Don't even talk about books. It's amazing.
Anna Quinlan, who's an author, said one time that, I love this quote too, good decorating consists mainly in having enough bookshelves.
That's very true.
So it's like,
you didn't live in an area that had the Strand bookstore.
No, but I used to manage Walden bookstores.
Fun.
I got a lot of freebies,
I don't have my list that I sent out. As I said, I'm offline right now. So we're going to have to come up with our characters.
I've got the list
media.
Open here.
I had it here.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I'm willing to be the narrator.
We need Doc. Somebody to be Doc. Or is that... That was in... in parentheses, so maybe...
Oh, well, that's just where we are.
Okay. Okay. Paul.
Do you want to be... who wants to be Alice? Do you want to be Alice, David?
That's actually Crowley.
That's Alistair Crowley in his effeminate form.
And David's not jumping at this chair.
No, he's not.
But I'm here. I'm just looking to see what it was.
Well, we got you. We can put you in another. We got another guy in here.
We have Alistair Crowley.
Oh, we have Alistair Crowley in drag. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do Austin Spare.
Okay. I'll do Alice.
Oh, okay. Okay, I was going to say I can do Alice, but it'd be more authentic if you do it.
Look at my hat!
You're in drag, but your voice will be
Alice.
Alice. And besides that, if I can get a quote Jefferson Airplane, go ask
Al.
Do
you want to be Sophie? I could.
All right. How much
so you are. And then we got Barbara Promethea.
Well, you know. Hey, that's Barbara. Listen, I claimed Barbara a long time ago. You know that.
All right, all right.
I mean,
and I don't think there's anybody else in here, to be honest with you.
Well, what about Newberg?
Newberg.
That's, Newberg, okay.
You want me to be Newberg?
Yeah, you can be Newberg.
Oh, dear, okay.
We are, by the way, we are going to afterwards, after we read through this, death section, we will be consulting the notes, which can be quite extensive on the PDF thing. So if you don't have your PDF file open, you might want to go to it. Okay. Promethea, America's Best Comics, Moore, Williams, Gary Cox, Klein. There comes awakening. Oh, there is no other side. Just endless falling. Minutes of.
Are we in book five?
Yeah. Book four.
Book four.
Oh,
second
I thought book five. I took the wrong book. All right. Excuse me.
Continue, oh brave narrator.
All right. There is no other side, just endless falling. Minutes of it, hours waiting for impact that will never come. After just 10 minutes, too hoarse, too emotionally exhausted now to even scream, 3 hours later there comes blackout, comes unconsciousness, there comes awakening. Falling was a dream, and the reality is this fluorescent desert barren eeriness extends to the horizons, if there is one. Nothing for it but to walk without direction for perhaps a sunless day until at last despairing sleep. And falling, obviously the desert has been only fantasy. The compensation clutched by the mind desperate to escape the plummeting horror. This time more accustomed, passing out takes longer only after several hours of weeping into slipstream. Do the eyes close, opening to the cold slap of Whitecap, suddenly remembering the clifftop leap into the dark great sea. All else, the plunge, the wasteland was hallucination born of icy water and fatigue. Swim on, struggle to stay afloat, awake not, slip into unconsciousness, and falling, falling, falling.
Oh God, dreaming. I was dreaming again, or else this is. We were still falling, weren't we?
Yeah. Come. Come on, let's keep moving.
Barbara, there's no point. We're not going anywhere. We're lost. God help me, I wish I was dead.
I'm already dead. I just wish I'd been. Never been born. Look at this place. It's horrible. These radioactive weeds. These busted up paving slabs.
They're not paving slabs, just rocks. Some accident in how they look. We jumped over the edge of everything. There's no pathways out here.
Well, couldn't there be once have been a path or something? That looks like one of them highway markers.
God, you're right. It does. But it's so corroded, you can't read it anymore. I don't understand. In all Jack South's books, it says there's no path across the four spheres. It's almost as if there used to be a path here, like you said. But, I mean, Carol's paths aren't just roadways. They're the connections of our souls. What could have happened to it?
I can see something up ahead. Sophie, look. You better come and look at this. what does this say? He, far, he, are. I can't make it out.
The beggar. The statue looks like it used to be a beggar, but there's no such tarot card. Baba, we're right off the map here.
I thought you said this Kabbalah business was a map of everything.
It is, but here, the abyss, there's just sort of a gap. The beggar, it has to mean something, or I don't know, maybe it meant something once, but doesn't anymore.
All I can remember with beggars is those old stories where kings and gods and stuff disguise themselves.
I guess this abyss is where God's energy enters the universe from... when they want to enter the ordinary human world or something.
Okay, let's see. Oh, so let me see. There's just spheres 4 and then this abyss thing. Then there's spheres 3 on the other side. There's nothing in between.
Well, some books mention something called the false sphere or the invisible sphere. It looked hard, but I skipped it.
Jack Faust editorial.
Okay.
Actually, thinking about it, that was probably a mistake.
What place is this? Oh,
I don't think it is a place. Not anymore. It's like whatever was here just, I don't know, collapsed or something.
But these spheres are whole states of being, right? How could one collapse?
I don't know. I think that says death over the arch.
Death? What? A Death Vader? Like
I think it's a Hebrew word that means knowledge. It's, what's that?
What's what?
There was some skeleton thing right behind that masonry. It was like this Day-Glow centipede. Hey, that's it. It's Day-Glow. This place is sort of colored like black light. Maybe invisible sphere means ultraviolet.
Hey, I see somebody.
You're right. It's somebody on a camel, and they're on some sort of path through these ruins.
Hey, you! Wait up! excuse us, lady, but we're sort of lost out here. We wondered if you could maybe...
Joy has arrived.
Barbara, wait, that's not a woman. It looks more like a guy, or... Oh, geez, are you Alistair Crowley?
Why, whatever do you girls be? When I'm like this, you can call me Alice. You see, I'm writing Luke 13 Gimel, the High Priestess, up to the crown. Here, magicians become magic itself. The penetrator becomes the... penetrated, male becomes female. Gimel, that's the path from Deborah to Keter. Doesn't it mean camel in Hebrew?
Oops, that's what you guys.
Yeah, that's Sophie. Okay.
And the next is, wait, is...
That's me? Yeah. Wait a minute. So this high priestess path you're on, you have to travel it in drag?
Goodness, no! I've never been a woman you are, dear. Look, you see that pretty little V with the cleft just like yours? Do you know, I've heard some men are awful vulgar creatures refer to it as the camel's hoof.
Huh?
Billy.
See? 5 footprints of the camel. B, 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 B. Toodle peep, there is.
I think
that's you too, Paul, at the bottom. Anyway, I can't stand here.
Anyway, I can't stand here gossiping with you all night. I have an appointment to the crown of creation. And oh, I say, isn't that interesting? Just there, in the sand, behind the pen.
Okay, and he toodle pips off.
Yeah. Barbara.
Is that, no, isn't that
no,
Sophie?
Sophie?
No, it's Sophie. V.
Oh, yeah, Sophie's top and then Barbara.
V. I think I heard that before somewhere.
God, was that friggin' up or what? Hey, why can't we follow that priestess path like he, like she's doing? It's gotta beat this goddamn place.
Because Route 13 heads up the Sphere 1 Kether, the crown, and that's not where we're going. We're following Steve, and Boo Boo thought he had headed across this abyss to Sphere 3. Besides, I'm gonna look at those ruins.
You know, I really miss Boo Boo. It's like I got this hole in me where she's not.
Yeah, I feel the same about Promethea. Hey, look at this carving of the planets. There's an extra one between Mars and Jupiter. That'd be where the asteroid belt is now. Do you think it's the planet that once represented this sphere that they both got destroyed?
I don't know. I'm just afraid that we're... Oh, friggin'... Aw, that's friggin' gross.
What? What was it? Was it another one of those centipede things?
It was more a jellyfish or, I don't know, some animal that never existed. I was like something H.P. Lovecraft pulled out of his nose. Editorial over there. Okay.
God, you're right. And if you knock the top crossbar off the
pipe... Wait a minute. I don't think it goes down. I think you go back over to the left.
Yeah.
The next page? The other page?
Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe there.
I think either way it'll work.
Never mind.
Okay, go on.
So, am I at maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay. Maybe there are the animals of this place, and it's like with that extra planet, the things that symbolize this place don't really exist anymore.
What about that over there? Is that this place's number?
I guess so. Sephira means number, so even if this place is a false Sephira, it should have a number. This looks like an 11, and I think someplace people call that the 11th Sephira.
What 11? Comes between 3 and 4?
Yeah, that seems wrong, doesn't it? Sphere 3, one side of the abyss, sphere 4 on the other, and 11 between them. But then there isn't a number between 3 and 4. I guess anything would sound wrong.
What about pi?
Pi? But, like, pi can't ever be calculated exactly, so it's not even a real number.
Well, then that makes it a false number, right? A false sephira. Plus, it's between 3 and 4, ain't it? 3.17 something?
God, you're right. And if you knock the top crossbar off the pi symbol, isn't that 11 feet off? And because calculating pi goes on forever, I guess, like that, the abyss, it's sort of bottomless.
Huh? Jesus, Sophie, look out!
Wow.
Yeah.
And here we are, met with a bunch of wordless entities. Anybody want to practice their powers of description?
Well, these are like a beetle, a weird-looking beetle on the bottom. I mean, they're multiple colors.
And there's a sword.
There's a sword. And amoebas, almost like
jellyfish.
Jellyfish, yeah. You know, something like you would find.
Octopus.
Mm-hmm. They're
like creatures in under the sea.
Right, the depths.
Like them, they have no eyes.
Yeah, and they're all luminescent. They have new discoveries of luminescent fish, and the
and they all seem to be part of going into like an abyss.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned they have no eyes, Cynthia, but the one in the middle looks almost like
an eye, like an eye of God.
Definitely does. They all look like they have something.
Yeah.
That, if you wanted to, describes an eye. But in fact, these fluorescent fish, as far as we know, I'm sure we'll discover more. Many appear to be eyeless.
That's very interesting.
They don't need eyes down there.
The only element here is the sword. Represented as a being, as a creature of this abyss.
That might say something about knowledge.
Knowledge,
And swords.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That may be the association.
Shall we
continue?
Flip over the page?
Yep.
Certainly.
It's like a black hole, except it's mauve.
Our
80s. Yeah,
right. I think it's a hole through the entire tree. We have to go around it.
But that's like a hole through existence. Where does it lead?
The reverse side of the tree, maybe? Where things like that live?
It feels like a hole through me. I'm getting this lump in my throat.
Huh, Barbara? Barbara, up ahead. There's something else.
A very weird lightning-struck tower figure comes up.
Undulating tower.
Undulating, yeah. Okay. A black tower, you know, for saying there's supposed to be nothing here, this place is pretty scenic.
We should probably check it out.
Sophie, I don't know, maybe something's bad lives there.
Well, that looks like a regular person waiting outside to welcome us. In fact, it's you. Hello again.
Austin? Austin Spar, it is you. It's you, God. You're so much younger, and you look beautiful.
Of this I know nothing of this. Nothing may be said.
He said he wouldn't know us if we met again. Mr. Spar, we're pilgrims. Can you tell us where we are?
We are not in non-existence. Neither are we in that existence, which is God. Neither that which is not God. This is the Tower of the Adepts, the Black Brothers, and it is at Doth. No light is here emitted.
Sophie, I don't like this. This ain't a place like the other places we've been. They all made sense.
I think if death means knowledge, it's a kind of knowledge that's beyond sense. Mr. Spar, can you tell us about Doth? How did it get like this?
Doth is the great beginning. Was a sphere as true as any. Paths led to it, from it, both the beggar and the fountain. Then the tree was of a whole. God was not separated from God's universe. Now came the fall. Now came the cataclysm. The lightning energies of God descending, overwhelming the structures of existence. Its lower spheres were broken from the three divine supernals. Where Doth had been was now dreadful absence, was a marvelous crack in everything.
Oh, Jesus, you mean the whole universe, all of existence, it broke in half? We're living in a broken cosmos because this fall, this disastrous accident?
The three heads of God were sundered from the existence. Who shall say that this was accident? And likewise, who shall say that this accident be not but arabesques within some wider figure? Of this nothing is known. But Doth means knowledge, doesn't it? How can knowledge be symbolized by a barren place like this? Like its shattered planet or its unseen color, doth is that knowledge knowable only by its absence. It is the neither, neither is it. It is the neither, neither. It is that knowledge here pursued by the Black Brothers in the Tower of the Adepts. No light is here is emitted. Fare you well, sisters.
Huh? Well, if he was embarrassed about running into the old one-night stand, he only had to say. Okay.
I don't think you should take it personally. That wasn't the same Austin Spar you had your fling with. This one was in some other space.
Yeah, well, I don't understand any of it.
Yeah, to be honest, most of what he said, I was lost. I guess that the abyss, we're intellectually lost, emotionally lost, spiritually lost.
At least we're headed the right way. There's another ruined pathway.
Oh, you're right. And another unreadable highway marker. This must be one of those two paths Star mentioned that led to and from death before the whole system collapsed. I guess only these faint traces remain. The beggar led from Chesa to death, so this must be the path leading from death up to the third sphere, Vina. I think Spud mentioned its name.
Yeah, he did. It's the fountain.
Wow. I wonder what it used to mean.
Waters breaking in the womb, waters of the great sea breaking on the shores of Bina, our black mother.
Barb, are you okay?
What's just happened? What did I say? I had this lump in my throat.
You said something about waters breaking in your voice. It didn't sound like you.
Jesus, I'm scared. It was like I wasn't there. Like I was just a speaking tube or something. A hollow reed.
I think I read that this sphere corresponds to the throat chakra. That's sort of a speaking tube.
Holy God, Sophie, I'm telling you, I can't take much more of this place. Come and look.
Ah, oh.
Is that Crowley freaking again? Freak again, only this time he's a man. Is he doing that other guy?
Yeah. I think that's Victor Newberg.
Oh, no.
I think this is a...
Okay, you know, now you know who you are.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I think that's Victor Newberg. I think this is a... Corazon working. What did I say that right? What is that word?
Chorozon. Yeah, that's good enough.
Chorozon, okay.
Yeah.
The what?
Calling his lover, the poet Victor Newberg, went into the desert to summon Corazon, the demon of dispersal.
There, our wills are exhausted. Stay in the circle, brother. I'm going to try something.
I heard that Corazon inhabits this abyss wherein he's like chaos. He's constantly tearing his whole universe into pieces.
Victor.
Alistair, where are you going? Don't go inside the triangle. That's for summoning Corazon into.
What's Crowley doing?
For some reason, he insisted on being in the triangle. He called the demon into himself. Yuba reported horrible transformations and possessions. Whatever happened, it destroyed their relationship and nearly destroyed Newberg.
But this Corazon thing, it sounds friggin' terrifying. Why would Crowley call it into himself? Did he want to be torn to pieces?
I don't know. Maybe he thought being torn to pieces was necessary.
Necessary? What, being reduced to practically nothing? Come on. I want us to be out of here before whatever he's summoning actually decides to show up.
Oh, no, Barth. I think we're too late.
Ooh. Ah, Sophie, help me.
I can't hold on this wind. It's tearing me through. Ah.
Sophie!
No, no, no. I'm still alive. I'm still alive. I'm still alive.
And into the abyss.
And falling. Eventually, our century comes merciful in consciousness and nothing else, nothing of the rest was true, save this interminable drop.
Oh no, not this again, Sophie. I'm going to go mad. Is this it? Is this where we do forever? What we do forever, we just fall or swim or stumble through the nightmare desert?
Barbara, I think my foot, it just touched bottom.
Oh, you're right. Does this mean we made it? We got across the abyss?
I think so. Let's head up this black beach, see if there's anything that we recognize.
Next, the wine of her fornification.
And it's Bina. They got to Bina.
Yay.
Yay.
And believe me, in this case, the journey was not half the fun, you know.
Yeah. Yes, so.
There were several things about Doth, like the whole chapter, but I had read this before, but I hadn't been exposed when I read it to Pi the movie.
Oh yes.
Pi the movie?
Oh yes, I have it. Time to see it again,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's Kabbalistic, and it's about Pi and about mathematics and. Yada, yada, yada.
Is that the life of Pi, Cynthia? Is that the
no.
No, it's just called Pi.
It was an independent film, and it deals with Kabbalah and the search of mathematicians, Hasidim. He's set in Brooklyn, in the Hasidic community, and his search for Pi, the power of Pi.
It's Darren Aronofsky's personal, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done a couple since then.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Different.
Well, make your point about Pi.
I thought it was brilliant the way Alan Moore brought in, mm-hmm. you know, the physical symbol of Pi.
Yeah.
And 11, and Doth.
Mm-hmm. And the number between 3 and 4. I thought that was amazing that he used that.
Right.
Number 3 and 4. Right.
1.14. Yeah.
And then
Bath
is between 3 and 4.
Okay, I want to refer us to the PDF.
Okay.
I'm going to go downstairs, and I have to get my computer.
And we're going to go. I can't tell you the page, but it's the part. It's the part after the panel, which says. Page 11, panels 4 and 5, Pi, false number, 3.17.
Ironic, it's page 11.
Oh. And then beyond the page, the next one is the part that somebody could read aloud if they wish is the italics part. This is a stuff on Angel. And the Pi.
Oh, wait a minute, I don't think I'm on the right page. What page is it, David, did you say?
277.
277.
Okay. I'm not down. I'll read it, but let me get there. Okay, 277.
Page 4 at the top of the page.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute.
Mostly audience role, mind.
Huh. Well, now, wait a minute. My page 277 starts with page 5, panels 3 to 5.
Yeah, that's what mine does.
Okay, but
need
go down to
the... going, then. You just need to keep turning the pages.
Okay, okay. Oh, I see. Alrighty. Alan shares all his plot progressions with me as he writes them, says Melinda. Mostly audience role, mine, though I have been known to...
Enjoy. Has left the conference.
I came up with the name for Angel Boo Boo in Promethea. It's my cat's nickname. I also suggested Pi as the number of the Abyss, featured in issue 20 of Promethea. Alan is a little more complimentary to Melinda's contribution. Melinda has to sit through my tortured bleedings when I can't see my way out of wherever weed-choked literary cul-de-sac I've enthusiastically charged up, and on more than one occasion, she's provided me with a way out. Probably she did this because it's a depressing spectacle to watch, like a budgerigger flying repeatedly into a pane of glass. Sooner or later, even the hardest heart will be moved to get up and open the window. Specific examples I try to blot out of my mind because they contradict my carefully tended self-image of absolute omnipotence. On the other hand, I do recall when I was working on issue 20 of Promethea, I was complaining to Melinda about the intellectual isolation of my lonely path and how it clearly wasn't fair that I should be expected to work out things like the magical number of the abysmal Sephira dot when even Aleister Crowley hadn't managed it. She immediately brightly suggested a couple of mathematical abstracts, like Pi and the Golden Section. But I just said, get back on the wagon, in the wagon, woman, I know what I'm doing, and went back to frowning dejectedly at the wall for another couple of days. Finally, it suddenly struck me that Pi, being an ultimately indefinable and thus false number, or Sephira, situated between the numbers 3 and 4, had to be the number of it.
Enjoy again. Has arrived.
Then I remembered Melinda had suggested the solution a few days beforehand, and I must admit to feeling humbled. Luckily, however, I was able to pass the remark off as a fluke and still managed to somehow imply it was me who'd done all the real brain work. I hope she isn't reading this, or my fragile facade of English intellectual superiority will surely be shattered forever.
So there's this is how he came up with Pi. So it's one of the original aspects or readings of Doth, and is definitely an important one. I thought that would make sense. The other thing that makes sense to go on, and it starts over in the next. Well, we're skipping over stuff, but. And I don't know if we want to read it all aloud. I'm just going to basically point it out to you. It's the starts. TL advises me that the Black Brothers are the black magicians who do not succeed in crossing the abyss. Crowley talks about them in Magic and Theory and Practice. Then we have a long section on Magic and Theory and Practice, dealing with the loss of the Black Brothers, and then we also have something from the Liber OS. Starting with line 10. This is starting over on another page over. And now he considers special problems such as the origin of the world, the origin of evil, infinity, the absolute, the ego and the non-ego, free will and destiny, and such others that may attract him. These are the kinds of things that one solves when one is in Doth. That's my editorial aside, by the way. Not that it'll make any sense outside
right,
of Doth, huh? And from the Liber 9-3, importance of the exempt adept, that we cannot overrate it. Again, the exempt adept is the adept that is usually the great attempts to cross Doth, and you either make it or you don't. And if you don't, you're crazy for the rest of forever. It's okay. There's all sorts of stuff that we all know that Doth is the elementary canal of the Sether. It's the cosmic garbage chute. Again, this is editorial, not reading. Let's see. Then, obviously, lastly, there's the vision of the voice, the cry of the ten ethers events, which is this is also several pages over from that. It says page 20, top panel, and has to do with Crawley and Newberg's head are starting to dissolve slightly, like Sophia's shoes, on page 12.
Okay.
And then it talks about. And then JHW's issue of is a particular senior mention was Alan for Crawley to be the top, even though it's been documented for Crawley that he was on the bottom. This, I guess, is important. You know. So his appearance initially in Doth is Gimmel in drag. Is probably more appropriate that he was, but the point was with this breaking down of consensual norms.
Gimel is the Hebrew letter, Paul.
Yeah, it's also the camel.
That's right, it means camel.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, but, just off the top of your head, do you know what card Gimel is associated with? Does anybody?
The Empress.
The High Priestess.
Oh, sorry.
The High Priestess.
The High Priestess.
Yeah, which is why he's riding the camel. He says he's riding the camel.
That's right. He says he's riding
the Empress. If you use the Eliphaz Levi attribution, but Crowley used the Golden Dawn attribution.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, she's the longest path on the Tree of Life, by the way, too.
Right.
The longest path on the Tree of Life.
Because across it goes from Tiferet to Keter.
Yeah, and that's also the profound, and that's why she, in Tomberg idea of the High Priestess, she represents Gnosis, right after
that's right.
High mysticism of the magician, which I still have a hard time swallowing. The magician is the high mystic, but that's
High Priestess passes over the abyss.
Yeah, it does. Passes right through knowledge, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, and that's and part of it is a gnosis knowledge.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about unitive knowledge, as different from knowledge, is most knowledge is invested in our sensory experience,
uh-huh.
and it's object oriented.
He references Asch's The Garden of Earthly Delights on page 147.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about Crowley, referencing a bladder-shaped pink outline is repeated in a small white square on top of Crowley's left hand.
Now, where is this that you're wearing?
I'm on Promethea, page 147 of 479.
Oh, wait a minute.
147? Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything to us.
No?
No.
Why would...
Well, I'm on page 283 right now in this...
Right. I was... I came to a part that had a lot of Crowley images.
Oh, so you're back up further in the...
Right, I went back. And because I was fascinated by the fish-like objects, and they are shaped in a Hieronymus Bosch kind of way.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Okay.
So, if you're really interested in this, and I actually would, unlike Sophie, who skipped that part.
Yeah. It seems hard, so I skipped it, yes.
Yeah, I skipped it. Right, I skipped it. I didn't want to deal with it. I just skipped it.
Just
pop right over the thing.
Will doesn't discuss Doth at all.
Hmm?
Walt in classes doesn't discuss Doth.
No.
Yeah, but I do. So I do suggest reading some of these notes about Doth. And I'm trying to think of what's his name, Garrett. Is it Knightley? Garrett Knightley.
Garrett Knight. Yeah.
Does he discuss Doth? I think he may, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I'm pretty sure he does.
In his practical probabilistic symbolism?
That's the book.
Yeah, let me see. I have it right here.
And Paul, you said the doth mean is knowledge. So I mean, it's passing over the path of knowledge.
Okay. But I want to do a slight.
I'm sorry, David. I just got that. That was in reference to Wald, wasn't it? That's hilarious.
I didn't get it.
Wald and doth is knowledge. Let me, this is a slight analogy that may or may not be appropriate. The analogy is to the view of Maya in the Hindu version, particularly Maya as a tattva in the tattva system, which was adopted by the Golden Dawn.
Right.
But Maya is the equivalent of doth in a way, though Maya may be related to Bina as the universal mother. Maya means ma, and ma means measure. To measure is the root of all of knowledge, both the objective knowledge and in its minus form or its irrational form, it would also represent gnosis and the way the high priestess does.
Now, what did you call it? Calculations?
Ma means measure. Maya. Ma. M-A.
And doesn't...
If you look up...
Maya is supposed to be illusion.
That's what they say, right? But that's what
right.
they say doth is, too, right? It's
right. Well, in Buddhism, which the high priestess is the moon, and moon is illusion.
Right, and the thing about the illusion with the moon is that it's because the moon goes through these phases, right, of dark and light. And so sometimes the moon can be very bright and can guide you kind of well, and sometimes the moon fades out and you kind of can't see it at all.
And interestingly enough, today is the dark moon, the new moon.
Yeah.
So
which is actually extremely, it makes perfect sense because doth is probably best penetrated, if we want to use that word.
Oh, my God.
lack of a better one.
Yeah.
We're right on pure symbolic time is working for us, serendipity. And speaking of serendipity, let us deal with our draw that we did today.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go over those again for the people who weren't here when we did them originally. One is the Eight of Cups, which is, what is it?
Indolence.
Oh, yeah. I'm too fond of indolence to write it down well. And this number two, which is would be the element of air, is lovers.
Two air or is it water?
Two is water. Water.
It's water. You're right. I'm wrong. Yeah, you're right. I was thinking in the opposite direction. Typical of me. Number three, which is air, is the two swords, peace. Mm-hmm. And then the four, making its first appearance in all of our drawings, is the star and Earth. And then five is the hidden motivation, and that's La Foule. And six is, what's that? Six is the, what do you call six again?
The future outcome.
Future outcome is the four of discs power. And then the arc of influence is number seven, Aeon. Number eight is the ace of discs. And number nine is the knight of wands. In other people's systems, it would be the king of wands.
That is a powerful, powerful arc of influence. I think one of the most powerful we've seen in any of our draws.
It is powerful. And but it's also powerful because in some ways I always see the arc of influence as sort of the dawn of the next chapter. One of my biases on how I'm reading these layouts, but as I always see it as intimations of the future rather than. But we could also see it as influencing the whole draw here. So anybody want to say about this particular thing specifically and what we've been reading about, Doth? Also, I also wanted to emphasize the originality of the symbolism of the undulating tower and the and the fountain in Moore's Promethea.
I think Moore ought to do his own tarot deck.
Yeah.
There was. You'll see that actually at the very end where they have the where they have the poster. It's like one panorama of the whole story.
Ah.
It's one of the last chapters, I think.
Is there a Doth tarot deck? That'll be a real project.
The trouble is, you wouldn't be able to hold on to it. It would be, you know, slippery and.
Well, I've already got it.
I mean, I could tell you this. No one would buy it.
One of the things from Bats is Mary has a little PowerPoint presentation that she's, you know, hawking around various places. And I saw it. It's actually nice. It's on cartomancy pictures from 1600s.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some of that on her blog. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, she says that's what her presentation is like if you get to the one in New Mexico that's coming up over near Halloween. They're having a Mary there, and she's going to be doing this, and they're also going to have some other presentations. And you can attend it. You can attend the major sessions as podcasts. So they're going to be videocasts live from the place. I don't know how well technology is going to work, but they're for $50 as opposed to $100 if you get there live.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, assuming my cash flow begins to flow again, I might even attend it live. I mean,
where is this going to be? You said New Mexico?
Yeah, Albuquerque.
Albuquerque?
I think it's Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out.
I think it's Santa Fe. I think it's Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Santa Fe?
Harry Paris has a big thing in it. Her and I can't remember who the other two are. Robert Hahn, I think.
Yeah, I have a picture of Robert Hahn, who was at Bats, and I think I know who the other person is too. I think it's Margaret Lectus.
She's going to be one of the speakers, I believe. Oh, yeah, she does have something to do with it. Yeah, she helps to organize it all.
I think that's the triad that got this together, with maybe Carrie heading it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure how it functions, but both Margaret and Robert were at Bats, and I took photos of both of them. I talked to Margaret a little bit, but not to Robert.
Robert Play?
No, Robert Hand.
Oh.
But anyway,
you were talking about Mary's.
Yeah, so she's got this thing. Oh, yeah. So one of the things she says towards the end is she's quoting some writers on cartomancy. She said, and they would hold these greasy cards with their greasy predictions. And I thought, you know, greasy cards, that sounds like a great idea. So I'm going to get some oil. I'm going to get some of these essential oils, you know.
Ooh.
And I'm going to grease up one of my cards really good so they all stink, you know, and they smell like kind of, you know, full
of... It's nicer if you say you're anointing.
And it works. And what? They'll stick together, and then you'll have... you'll peel off
cards.
The artwork.
Greasy, stinky cards, right? Well, maybe I'll just use them around the sides or something. But I've decided that I needed to have some greasy cards to, particularly do my public readings that I do with people. You know, so when they touch them and when they leave, their hands are stinking of this essential oil that I got.
Dan Pelletier in his process discusses how to age your cards.
Oh, yeah, he does. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And he's very big on not having new-looking cards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think oiling them up will definitely help that fact.
Well, most cards today have a plastic, veneer to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the oil isn't going to do much. You probably have to...
What will happen, it'll disintegrate the plastic and it'll stick, because I've done that. I've worked with essential oils on cards, thinking, oh, how wonderful, I'll anoint every card with the major arcana with its essential oil. Boy, did I get myself into a mess.
I think that the thing that I'll probably do is that where the plastic is not as more penetrable as on the edges of the card.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably where
I'll emphasize my annotation
rather than on the face of the card.
Right.
You know,
I do think that they will stink a little. I mean, they will not only stink, but they will have a tendency to be a little sticky.
So I have to say something here, too. Val, the very first time I met you in person at Reader Studio several years ago, I noticed your beloved Rider Waite deck, you know, was well used and well
loved. Yes.
It has a patina to it, and that's one of the first things I remember noticing about you was that your cards were so... What's the word I'm looking for?
She must be an authentic reader.
They were just so real looking, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't... Funny thing to remember, but I do. So.
Yeah, actually, I think that deck is going to be retired. I've got a new Rider Waite that...
Oh, wow.
This one is probably about 37 years old. There's no copyright symbols on it at all. There's no lamination on the cards. There's no coating on the cards.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's fabulous. So it's not
a... Oh, but they're alive. They are so alive. Yeah.
So just only use it for special readings.
Well, actually, I got two or three of them, and one of them is it's still sealed, and that one will remain sealed.
Uh-huh.
So it's like I had to have one. I've been trying to get one for years.
Now,
and I ended up getting three of them all within a month.
What did you search? How did you search? What was your search?
I've bid on plenty of them over the years, but always got out.
What are they? What did you bid on?
Rider Waite deck.
I understand that, but what year, how did it come up?
Oh, some that would have vintage in the title, but then I found others that titled as vintage that weren't vintage.
Right.
So basically, I just put in a search for Rider Waite, and I just checked it every day.
Because I have a couple of decks, but they're colored differently.
Ah.
Yeah, the Italian decks, the ones printed in Italy.
No. These are from Holly. They can be seen on Holly Riders.
Like the Pamela A.
Those kinds. You're talking about not as old as that, somewhere in between? Are they in the yellow boxes?
They are in the yellow boxes. I think they're much, much younger than what Holly has on her site. Like I said, this was probably... early 70s. It's about 30 to 37 years old.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'd kill for Pamela A. I'd give my right arm for a Pamela A.
Pamela A may show someday. Yeah.
Give my right foot. At least then you could still shuffle.
Yeah, I think that does make sense because people do come up, get old tarot decks all the time. A lot of people have old tarot decks that have been tucked away for years. I was looking at a vintage Aquarian deck from the 70s.
Oh, now those are cool.
Ooh.
And I was meeting with it because it was my friend had it, who I was staying with in San Francisco. I did tell her that I would gladly buy the deck from her if she didn't want it.
But you didn't come home with it, did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't. But she did. She did make a. She did make a cloth for me. A felt cloth that I can use to lay my cards on.
Right. Great.
Yeah.
Can I ask? Does anybody know what the undulating tower, the fountain, and the beggar are?
I said those are unique to probably. probably when you were going, when you were off the call, I mentioned that those were unique to Alan Moore.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, but what do you think they mean?
There was a the beggar was the fool, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, well,
I agree. I believe that the beggar and the fool are variants of each other, and very much the way the fool the fool's placement in the
right. It is.
Yeah.
In Wikipedia, I just want to in the largest. Yeah, the fool is usually depicted as a beggar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's in Visconti tarot. He's like a beggar.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest,
yeah.
the older,
yeah.
older, old, older
yeah,
kind.
Of beggar.
And he's right here in our hidden motivation.
Yeah, and we
in
all
the spread. We haven't gone over the spread yet.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could think of the fountain as the star.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you yep. could.
Right.
And then
yeah.
we could think of Victor and Alistair as the lovers.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
Oh,
they're
oh
all
you're
there.
Giving me the chills over here because of all of the analogy.
They're all
so the undulating tower could be something more sexual.
Mm. Well, it could be the Two of Swords. After all, it was two guys, right?
You know, I kind of like the Eight of Cups, too, the indolence. Remember Sophie's line? Oh, it seemed too hard, so I didn't bother reading it.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's kind of indolent, you know?
That's true. That's very true.
This is, yes, this is fascinating. And so, so of course, the outcome is the Four of Discs power,
yeah.
which is the, you know, in some ways, the classic, you know, from my point of view, it's the classic misreading of the Supernals.
Yeah.
A lot of people see that. We're about to enter the land of the Supernals. Before this, and this was it goes back to the Maya stuff I was talking about. Maya comes, and before Maya, you have what's called the Supernals. They represent the absolute qualities of the divine. And in Kashmashevism, there are five of them. And then you have Maya. And Maya itself is like kind of non-existent. And after Maya, all of the Supernals become limited. Limited knowledge, limited action, a limited sense of self, limited love or feeling. So
that's interesting because Barbara and Sophie, when they got to Doth and spent some time there, make a statement that they are intellectually lost, emotionally lost, and spiritually lost.
Mm. Everything but physical,
yes.
really.
Everything,
is,
yes. Everything
is
but physical.
Why,
yeah.
This is the reason why I'm saying that there is a very strong correlation between the Kashmir-Shaivite Tattva system, and of course I'm a initiated Kashmir-Shaivite. I mean, that's one of my mystical paths that I'm actually initiated into. So I do have a bias towards it. I spent a lot of years studying it, and I also spent a lot of years teaching it.
And I must admit, this is
and whereas I do not have initiatory degrees in the Tree of Life. The Tree of Life is relatively new. I've only actually been dealing with it the last few years when I've been talking to you guys or talking with you guys, because it's so much part of understanding the Tarot. And you know, so I've been sort of forced into the Tree of Life, not because I'm interested in it, but because it's part of the tradition of Tarot.
You know, it's part of the Golden Dawn tradition.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's also part of the Ephesus Levy. It's part of the occult Tarot.
Right.
As opposed to the magical Tarot. Now, the magical Tarot is the Tarot as it was constructed in the Renaissance, and which, you know, became, you know, stabilized you know, in the beginning of the Enlightenment, and then after starting with the Tella, and going through Papu and Ephes Levy, and then the Golden Dawn, you have that's the emergence of the occult Tarot. Purely is all the, is the natural symbolism of the Trumps as it relates to Neoplatonism and the natural metaphysics of the alchemical things. That's all magical, and you can say, and that's a convention.
That's very much Robert Place's take on the Trump.
Yeah, it's Robert Place's. It's also, to some degree, though I'm not going to insist upon it because I don't know him well enough, Marcus Katz's view, and also Paul Hughes Barrow's view. My orientation is more towards the magical tarot, which is the Renaissance magic tarot, and though I recognize the occult tarot, and I'm perfectly willing to deal with it, I see it as, it's sort of like, it's like they're graphs, you know how you have wild grapes, and in order for these exotic grapes to grow, you have to graft them onto the native rootstock. That's kind of what I see, aspects of the Tree of Life correlations and its grafts onto the, of course they've taken, so they're fairly viable plants.
I was going to say, they've produced a fine vintage, so,
I do have a tendency to want to do elemental analysis, which goes back to the magical tarot. And that way, I guess I'm curmudgeonly like our Jodorowsky, maybe, if we ever get around to his book.
But isn't that in a sense, I can see where you want to separate the two,
right.
Mind, if nothing else, but yet they're so blended. I mean, it's an evolution. It's an evolutionary process, don't you think?
This is correct. The only reason that you want to separate them is to understand that when somebody says, there's the people who say that tarot is only a game.
Right.
And that this divination thing is just a version of the game that sort of got out of hand.
Right.
Sort of like got out of the box. Whereas all the other games are in the box, and people play these games in various places.
Right.
They have this huge catalog of places in Italy and parts of Italy where they play. Oh, there's 100 players play this game. Still existing, play this version of tarot, and here are the rules.
Where does cartomancy then fit in? Would that fit in more with the magical tarot? I mean, if you're using a deck that's not a tarot deck, you're using just the regular cards. I mean, would it be related more to the magical?
Well, cartomancy gives you a sense of what the symbolism of the early tarot, particularly the non-Trump tarot, would represent. But also, cartomancy, it also has a history in terms of its development, and again, it goes into that Enlightenment period. Mary Greer's pictures. She goes back. The earliest pictures of cards are people playing cards, obviously gambling. And the earliest one she's been able to find, in which one might say that the beginning of the cartomancy view is being seen. She had pointed out in that PowerPoint presentation. I don't exactly remember where it is. It might be on one of her blogs too.
Could I just bring us back to Doth for a minute? Because I found what you said about Ma and knowledge and measure.
Yeah.
An allusion very interesting and all germane to Doth.
Exactly.
If Doth is knowledge and the expression of knowledge is best expressed through measure, and yet it's how would you put it? It's shunned by most Kabbalists that I know. In general speech and action and whatnot with the tarot and with their practice.
The Bible, often in both the Old and New Testament, and probably in almost every religion's holy books, discusses how do you say when you take censure, when you go around and you do a census, it's always spoken derogatorily because you are counting mankind, and that's sort of something that one shouldn't do.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of measure in terms of the count.
Right.
That's the classic thing in the about census.
Right.
Yeah, like I refuse to talk to my census taker.
Yeah,
you know, old magician from deep way back. I haven't been counted in the census in about 30 years now.
Well, they came to our door and they practically shoved it in and insisted.
Well, yeah, but people could come to my door, but I won't know they're there. See?
Mm.
You know, so I've told friends, I say, you come over to the house, but you better call me. Or go to the back window and bang on the window, because otherwise I'm not going to know you're there.
At any rate, did anybody, so you have the same creepy feeling about it that I do. Does anybody else?
They know so much already. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't mind being counted, but I don't want to be enumerated. You know, there's a difference.
But that's how you get money. It really is.
So
it's
you
very
don't
want to
be
important.
Enumerated as illuminated.
Wait, I work for a nonprofit.
What's the enumerated here?
Okay.
I know I'm enumerate, but that just means they don't know how to count or do basic arithmetic.
But I don't mind being part of a head count. I don't want them to know anything else.
But that's very important. It's very, very important. I filled out my census. It had, they know and didn't know, it was very banal. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
But the thing is that since I work for a nonprofit which deals with community services.
Yeah.
They're going to get their money by census.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
This is true.
And
yeah, there's good reasons for it, but there's also good reasons to not tell them more than they really need to know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, you should. I'm trying to remember. There are a couple places where it's in either Kings or Samuels. There's a couple of places where they talk about the census.
Well, that's my point. It's sort of a biblical injunction against the census.
Well, actually, no. What it was is God said to whoever it was, Saul or somebody, hey, you want a king? And the people said, yes, we want a king. All our neighbors have got kings. We don't have no king. We're just a big confederate tribes. He says, well, you know, you're going to lose something if you get a king. Well, we want a king. We want to be like everybody else, you know. And so when the kingship got set up, then one of the things that came up is there has to be a census has to go on. And, of course, some of the other classic laws that were brought down are the Jubilee laws, which we should be enforcing now. Of course, we're not because we're a bunch of idiots, but the Jubilee laws basically said that after 50 years, all debts are absolved. So that would mean that our deficits would just disappear.
Which is cause for jubilee, I would say. Yes.
Well, yes. We deserve. We should have jubilee laws because the fact of the matter is, if you don't have jubilee laws, you have a very you have this accumulation of the very very rich and the very very poor, and that's what we're having happen all over the world now. And the only fixed is you're going to have a jubilee law where everything is kind of redistributed. The very, very rich are still going to be very, very rich, but they're not going to be as obscenely rich as they are now, so that there's a little liquidity for the very, very poor to exist.
This may sound kind of weird, and I don't want to take us off on a weird tangent, but the new bankruptcy laws are kind of leaning in that direction, don't you think?
The new bankruptcy laws are actually prohibit aspects of Jubilee. They don't allow you to dismiss your student debts. There's all sorts of things wrong with some of those new bankruptcy laws. That's the way I understand them. Now, maybe I've been misinformed.
It's much easier, though, to find... file and be granted bankruptcy status than it used to be.
Yes, because they're not forgiving you as much debt as they used to.
Well,
I mean, so that's less. Something's off there.
Yeah.
Something's off. I've never been that much in debt. I've never been that big a deadbeat to where I could have used the bankruptcy. I should have been a bigger deadbeat. I should have had greater, whatever it is.
Well, something else that I think is very interesting, and this is more of a social commentary, is that the stigma of bankruptcy is fast dissolving. I mean, no longer are you looked upon as a failure if you've declared bankruptcy.
Well, the problem is at this point now is that banks aren't giving anybody. Aren't giving anybody credit, no matter what your rep is. So, and that, of course, is also causing us to come roll down.
Well, but, I'm sorry. I didn't really mean to take us off on a tangent.
But actually, as off as some of this may seem, it does relate to Doth, the Doth in the sense of something that's uncountable, something that doesn't fit. You know, that doesn't fit into the system. The thing that the system has to get rid of for the system to continue to work. You know, so for an open system to continue to work, it has to have a way of bringing in the new and throwing out the old. And that's kind of what Doth is doing.
That's interesting, Paul, because in a way, you're talking about the shards, repair the shards.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is the goal of the capitalist. And you're referring to it in terms of Doth, the specific Sephira.
It's
so hard to crumble things, and yet that's where by what you're saying, might be actually where the reparation takes place, or am I completely misguided?
Well, actually, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a mystery. Maybe to be played with for a while. But one of the things that I would see is interesting about Doth is Doth may be where the inversions take place. In other words, it's where you and they mentioned this in part where you having the reverse side of the Sephira, the shadow Sephira.
My bad, Sophie and Barbara upside down.
Yeah, but part of that also meant that you have, a Keter and anti-Keter.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Joy, are you still around? You want to join in on this fabulous speculation that I'm throwing out here?
I gotta say, I keep drifting off a little bit.
I'm putting her to sleep.
No, you're not putting me to sleep. You're inspiring my thoughts towards that picture. I heard Keter and anti-Keter as their way of looking at Doth, and that sounds pretty interesting. I also like your Four of Discs comments. It's kind of a variation on the six animals.
Speaking of the Four of Discs, we have the Arc of Influence, then is the Aeon, and then the Ace of Discs, and the Knight of Wands. Yeah. I mean, that's
very powerful.
Really powerful.
Yeah, very powerful. There's a calling and then a manifestation of the calling and the enactment of, of the energy that's there.
So in some ways, it's in all of it, and in some ways, you can almost see it as a procession of power. It's sort of like power building up,
right?
But power is, as I said, with nine, it's like completed and incompleted because wands is full intention, but isn't you don't quite act yet. The act comes. Comes later, and then of course the question could be the Four of Discs, which is the power of the enactment, or in my way of looking at it, it could be the next chapter we're going to, which is Bina, I believe, right? The Dark Mother.
Yeah.
So Maribeth, why do you see the Arc of Influence as being so powerful?
Well, these are all very powerful cards, first of all.
They are.
Kind of the bottom line there. But I also, the juxtaposition of the elements is just incredible, mm-hmm. I think. I mean, judgment or eon can be either fire or water, as I recall. What we are missing in the Arc of Influence here is the element of air. But to me, air is the most insubstantial of the elements anyway, you know, thought, and thought is fleeting. But we've got, I see something being built here. I see a calling. I see something manifesting that calling, and I see it manifested through will. So to me, that all seems very, very powerful. I mean, it's answering a call to manifest something through your will.
And you have the future outcome as Four of Pentacles, Four of Discs.
Yeah.
Power.
I mean, this is your power.
What you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. You listen to the calling, you use your will and make things happen, and you have power, you know, so.
Yeah, I kind of think that's true. I mean, I was looking at the four elements, the Yod, Heh, Vav, Heh.
Uh-huh.
So the Eight of Cups at the very beginning is called indolence. I don't like that word for it because I think there's the man walking away from
right.
The still waters. He's moving away from his emotions.
Right.
And I think what that we were doing and before we got to Doth, we were moving out of the lower part of the tree and we're moving into the higher part of the tree. And so we're leaving the old stuff behind and moving on to a new phase of life.
And eight is...
wait a minute, Paul. We're making decisions, and that's the lovers. And we, by making the decisions, we'll find some inner peace, which is the Two of Swords. And we're going to get that inner peace by connecting to the divine, which is the supernal triad.
Yeah.
And I think that all speaks very highly to me. And that the Fool, it says, be detached from all the stuff that has come before this.
Mm-hmm.
And be detached from what we're seeing. And it's through that detachment that we'll receive our power. Now, that's the way I read that whole spread. And then I do think I agree with...
The Fool is in hidden motivation.
Pardon me?
The Fool is in hidden motivation.
But you can also see the hidden motivation as a hidden attitude that you may need to have.
Right.
The attitude that makes this this version of the tetragrammaton work. You know?
Yeah, I thought the spread was very powerful.
Right at
the beginning.
May I say something? I looked up indolence. And it says here, indolent. Okay, indolent. A causing little or no pain, slow to develop or heal. Indolent tumors. It is
so not so much indolent as being lazy, but
right.
Yeah.
Slow.
Well, the
slow
other thing is
develop.
That's the cup.
That card of the third deck doesn't look like it's a very happy card.
Right.
Yeah,
this is adverse to activity or effort or movement. This is very interesting
other,
when you look at
the way to look at that, to look at that also is that it's the cups. And the Eight of Cups is very much the as above, so below moment because it's the eight. And I'm real strong on my eights here, being vertical infinity signs. And this goes back to that mirroring stuff that I was saying, which is essential to Doth. Not only do you have Keter and anti-Keter, but all the Sephira would have an anti-Sephira would have it's an opposition or a shadow side that would be accessible through Doth. But you also have the division between the supernal, which would be the purely verticals, and then the stuff below are vertical and horizontals. Everything and all the horizontal views of everything. So part of anti-Keter is Malkut. Keter and Malkut are often paired,
Is it really anti-Keter, though? I mean, there's a difference between something being an opposite and something being a shadow side.
Yes and no. Yeah, the oppositions classically with the Tree of Life is that you fold it over so that 1 and 10 are matched and 9 and 2 are matched and 8 and
three are matched.
But I still don't see them as the same. I see them as being paired and opposites, but I don't necessarily see that the same as a shadow.
They're different. That's why I said the anti. That I mentioned. I'm talking, when I say anti-Keter, I'm talking serious shadow.
Okay.
That's meaning a shadow, not dealing with this pairing stuff, which is another way that some people deal with the differences between the sort of completeness of the supernal. Supernals are complete. Now, in the Kashmir Shaivism thing,
we talk about the eights. I think the eights all deal with manifestation, and I think the whole spread is about manifesting into the future. And the ace of discs in the eighth position, which is at the top of the arc of influence, that is really powerful to me. When I look at that particular card, that's the one with the garden with the roses and the lilies, and the gate moves into a new position, a new space. And I think that's what we're doing here. We're moving out of all this stuff, out of the abyss, and into the new. And it has to do with eight. It has to do with manifestation. And it started with manifestation at the emotional level, and it ends with manifestation in the form of the eight of discs.
Yeah,
it's also interesting about the lemon scot, the vertical lemon scot.
Yeah.
You can think of it as an undulating tower.
Yeah.
Yes, you could.
Yeah. And I think you got a really good point there. If we look at the numbers that arise in this thing, we have the two eights, very powerful, and then we have the two of swords and the four of discs.
Right.
So we have the four, which comes right in the middle, you know, of the eight.
Wait a minute. Now what?
And then we have the two. Huh?
What two eights? Oh, we only have one eight.
We only have one eight.
We don't have an eight of cups. That's the ace of discs.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I was looking at the eighth place.
Yeah. Exactly.
I had to write stuff down differently, so I confused myself there. All right.
Cups is in the eighth position.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the numbers we got then are 8, 2, 4, and 1. Mm-hmm. Or ace. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's sort of like talking, their play on words when they talked beyond sense.
Yes.
And nonsense.
Nonsense. I know. I caught that too.
And I thought, when you're talking about anti-Keter and shadow or serious shadow Keter,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of beyond sense becoming nonsense.
Yeah.
And that to me sums up Das. What we say is my experience.
That's why you see I'm so at home here. I would have named Los Angeles.
Found his new apartment. It's in Doff, yes.
Yeah, well, my apartment, you think it is in Doff. Yeah, that's pretty. That leading tower, that undulating tower, those books about ready to fall on me.
Yeah, I have a couple of those around here, too. So there we are.
But it's so weird that I had to read a comic book to get any kind of grip on Doff.
I was just thinking about that, Cindy. I was thinking the exact same thing.
You know, and that's why
from a comic book, you know.
I brought up Prometheus to everyone when we were doing Tomberg, because nobody talks about Doff. And the only place I had ever seen it, and it's true, I read it years ago, but and I didn't absorb it the way I did today, and probably I'll absorb it more the next time I read it. But nowhere have I gotten sort of, how would you say, an overview, a small overview of that, so to speak.
Of course,
well,
one of the questions that comes up is, why is Doth so shunned?
Yeah,
it's forbidden knowledge. It's forbidden knowledge. It's the original tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You know.
Well, the other thing is, if you go back to Plato, you know, Plato and the Republic has this long diatribe against the poets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Poetry. And part of his diatribe, you know, in his perfect state, because, you know, he was perfectly capable of poetry himself, Plato was he realized that if you allow the true freedom of unfettered knowledge,
it would destroy tradition. And you need tradition to maintain a sense of stability in a world of mutability.
Mm-hmm.
That the world is mutable, and that you create tradition, which are authoritative branches of knowledge, you know, laws, you know, rules of thumb, conventions of speech, and so forth and so on. And if you allow the poets to blow this away, or
to pollute the groundwater of consensual reality.
Yes. Exactly. And,
yeah,
that,
right.
And this is why, and also in religion. Religion realizes that, you know, though they, every religion used to claim it had a total corner on the market of absolute reality. My God is the only true God because it is the God of Jesus Christ. And any other God is obviously false because it doesn't take into account the reality of incarnation of Jesus Christ. Okay.
Well, when you watch television, you know, with this divided news, the Fox, the MSN, the cable news stations,
yeah,
so-called news.
Are you reading? Are you watching those two extremes and thinking you're going to get something?
No, I've given up on all of it, Paul.
That's like somewhere in between Fox and MSN. There
but
it is.
I feel that there's a fight for consensual reality right now.
Oh, yeah.
That is what this war's everything is about. It's my consensual reality or your consensual reality. But reality are we getting now?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I would contend, and this is really going to take us far afield, but I would contend there's no such thing as quote-unquote reality. I mean,
well,
you
I
know, my perception is my reality,
yeah,
period.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know, that's it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well, that's part of the anti view of things, that there is no reality. And of course the other false view is that there is only this reality.
Exactly.
Whatever this reality
yeah.
happens to be. Both of those, reification and nullification, are called the extreme views in Buddhism. And
well,
and what is talked about is the middle path. Taking
yeah.
the middle path,
mm-hmm.
and even the Kabbalists talk about the middle path.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Platonists talk about the middle path.
And here, the middle path is non-reactionary.
You did take the middle path,
but Das is not the middle path.
But it's gone.
It's
the middle
gone.
Path doesn't exist.
Exactly. That's
right.
It. And even in occult physiology, they you know, they would have the Ida and the Shishina, which are the Ida and the Pingala, which are the two extreme spheres, the right and the left sphere of the rising of the Kundalini. But what they could never find is the Pingala itself, which is this not the Ida, I mean not the Pingala, the Shishina, which is the center path. There was.
Appropriate, you know. Some things aren't meant to come together. I mean, you know, I don't know.
You know, when I think about God, when I always think about God, I think of it as a gateway or a portal. You know, human beings can't get any much further up on the tree of life than Hesed or Gevurah. That's about as high we're ever going to get. And the only time we're going to get to the supernal triad is when we die. And I think that that is the doorway into death, Doth. It's the doorway into death, and we reach into the divine at that point. We blend up with all of that is.
I agree with you, David, if you're not a contemplative. In other words, if you're living an ordinary life ruled by your senses and your sense of embodiment. However, if you're a magician or a mystic and you do the exercises that are suggested of mystics and magicians that are different, you can go through Doth. You may not get through Doth, but you can try to go through Doth.
That's surviving.
And you can have a sense of the supernal. And one of the things that prevents us to have a sense of the supernal is our sense of being embodied here and now.
Yeah, but I think you can have that sense of going into the dot, into the abyss. I think you can have that.
I think this is one of the things that all mystical traditions go into. And I think it's one of the reasons they used to call it, in the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of books written on the holy anorexics, Buddha was an anorexic. Most of the saints.
Well, also, also the experience to deny the body.
Well, it's not a denial of the body because it's a specific use of the body. But
well,
it's not. It's, they were not. They were very sophisticated. I mean, people grew up from the time they had their eyes open. They saw animals fornicating. I mean, the flesh and the realities of life and death were very much a part of even the most wealthy homes, you know, in the Middle Ages and whatnot. So
today we're very removed from
that. We are very removed. We're more removed from the body than they were in many ways.
One of the things that I wanted to try to emphasize here is that the Doth experience is the analog to the dark night of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that I would like to emphasize that
that's
the dark night of the sense. The dark night of the senses is where you, understanding the inner world, the inner world opens to you. You understand that it is, has an autonomy that's different than the exterior world, and you go through a little depression as you break away from your attachments to the exterior world, to your, you know, to the your various ways, and some of that could be, and then, but what the Doth experience is this is when you're breaking away from the conventions of your interior world, your soulful world. You're about to experience directly spirit as spirit, not spirit as it's filtered through the colors of your soul and
not
your life,
concept
and your
of
body.
Or your
tradition.
Yeah.
It goes past any tradition you were raised in or know about or whatever.
Yeah. And this is why...
but you need a tradition.
And this is why Plato, in his... And the Republic wanted to banish the poets because the poets were constantly subverting the traditions, the laws, the conventions by which people understood things, which is what makes for social order, which is all exterior world stuff. And yet what we're talking about something is well beyond exterior world stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the root, it's also what holds the exterior world stuff together.
Speaking of poets and dissolving reality, one of my very favorite all-time poems is by Wallace Stevens. It's called Not Ideas About the Thing, But the Thing Itself.
Yes.
Very, very, very apt to this discussion. It ends with, it was like a new knowledge of reality, are the closing lines of it. And it's very powerful. Y'all should look it up,
for
sure.
Well, yeah, Paul Stevens, by the way, did study the Kabbalah at great length.
I beg your pardon, Paul, I didn't hear you.
I said Wallace Stevens did study the Kabbalah at great length.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which could explain why he's also one of my favorite poets.
He's a great
poet. He's one of the great American poets.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that we
have what's his name? W.H. Auden is also a fabulous poet that way.
Yes.
And also bringing in the tarot to some of this stuff, some fascinating things. His classic poem about the 99 names of the fool or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The Harlequin. Is that it? That's a Wallace Stevens poem, isn't it?
I don't remember that.
Well, maybe it's somebody else.
Is that Auden, Paul?
The Harlequin thing? Is that an Auden poem?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up now.
The poets are often good to read and study because they kick us loose of some of our cobwebs of our conventional.
As a practicing poet myself, I would say writing your own poetry is a good way to do it, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've got some, I'm a big fan of tarot doggerel. In fact, I ran into Sousa Black, who's about to become the only seventh graduate of the tarot school.
Wow.
Apparently, there's only been 7 people who have taken the full degree.
And if, oh, really?
Yeah, well, wow.
Correspondence course, you're saying.
Right. Right. Apparently, there's very few people who have ever completed it, because Walt is such a taskmaster.
Yeah. Yeah. He made me a little more mellow now, but we don't know, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Everybody, of course, wishes Walt well. If you don't know, he had a heart attack and was in the hospital last week.
How's he doing? Has anyone spoken
getting better.
He's back home. He is home.
Yeah.
Has anyone spoken to him at home?
No. Yeah, I have. He's doing well.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Oh, I was afraid to call. I thought I'd give him another week or so, but...
No.
He's
doing fine.
He's doing fine? Great.
Yeah, I think they gave him a stent.
Yes, they did.
Some sort of shunt or whatever.
Yeah.
You guys want to hear something really strange? 2 days before I found out about his heart attack, I was just thinking about Walt and Ruth Ann, and I literally had the thought, I hope both of them are around for a long, long time, because they are so very much the glue that holds so many of us together. And then I found out 2 days later that Walt had a heart attack. I thought, oh, God, I must have jinxed it, you know.
You were picking up on things. You weren't jinxing it.
I had a strong discussion with somebody recently about, you know, where Taro is an organization. And basically, in terms of our organizations, in Taro organizations, is we're still at the charismatic personality thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these strong charismatic personalities holding certain things together, making things work. But we haven't been able to organize beyond that.
Right.
You know, it's something potentially like the Reader Studio might be a way that a group of us could keep things going.
Yes.
Even when Ruth Ann and Walt are no longer
right.
able to be in center, how that would evolve might be difficult. But it will be. It'll be a crisis, but it'll also be an opportunity.
I agree. It is a crisis because it implies, you know, there are how many states in our union, and every state has a different attitude toward Tarot and the reading of Tarot. And in New York State, for instance, it can only be for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
And on and on and on. Actually, what you're talking about is state or federal, you know, which is what they're aspiring to, a set of tests or whatever, certifications. And that always gets to be iffy.
You're talking about it as legal stuff, and I'm talking about it as organizations. We could set up an organization as a committee of people, and I would actually go out to the stars, and ask them to be on the committee. Not necessarily being the administrative stuff. And start an organization that does things such as gives awards for new tarot decks.
Mm-hmm.
Has a recognized award or a series of awards for tarot decks in a variety of categories. And then would have give scholarship to the tarot readers. You know, and mm-hmm. it can, you know, the certification stuff that people are stuck on.
I'm very against that.
I am too.
Well, I want to be certified in. I think it would be great for someone to certify me in the Sacred Rose Tarot.
I tell you what.
That's what I want to know.
In the next Reader Studio, and I will we'll have one of those little pauses, you know, in between things.
Yeah.
And I will call you up and certify you and say that you now are the true master of the Sacred Rose Tarot.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
All people are
That's
here.
Very funny.
Well, think about it.
Yeah. Anna, don't you automatically qualify for a grandmaster through the TCBA because you
I don't know.
You know,
no one
has contributions.
I have
not. Well, no, they're not going to send you anything. They're a bunch of anyway.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's on point.
Well, I had a friend of mine call me a grandmaster the other day. Of course, that was when I had him tied up in
Right.
The thing is,
a
person creates a deck.
A bunch of grandfathers. You know, it doesn't make
a bunch of old ladies, too.
Yeah, grandmother, I'm saying. Grandfather did it.
Grandmothers, whatever, yeah. The whole thing is you have a whole bunch of tarot creators out there.
Yeah.
And some of them they contributed, say like Palladini, who did the Aquarian deck.
Aquarian.
He couldn't care less about tarot. He's an illustrator.
Yeah. Well, I think he's disappeared off the face of the earth.
He's been...
Tarot kind of started out that way, too, but then it sort of got into his blood, I think, you know?
Actually, Palladini did a podcast interview with Anastasia. Just a number of months ago, mm-hmm. Palladini.
Oh, really? That's right. Uh-huh. I read that. That is right, Val.
It was a really good one.
Dig it out of their archives.
Probably not more than 6 months. It hasn't been that long ago since I listened to it.
Whose podcast was it?
Anastasia Halsler or Haisley? I can't remember what her last name
is. Anastasia Halsler.
Halsey, I think.
Halsey?
I've got a picture of her on my bats thing. I know her quite well. So.
Now, I've got a picture of everybody.
I don't have your picture. You don't exist.
Well, I think you have.
Thank God you've got one of mine.
But I thought you were going in the area of another certification thing.
Well, the thing is that I think the certification is a bugaboo, and we should just avoid it. Instead of doing certifications, I would want to set up a charity. Basically, it's a place where people could leave a little bits of money to, and as a nonprofit, and it would do things as to encourage new artists who are doing tarot. It would do things. It would recognize new tarot things, and it would all be to encourage aspects of tarot, and also maybe encourage new readers to do things or have scholarships so people can go to tarot conventions.
I like the idea of awards, too.
What you do is you get the people on the committee who do the rewards, will all be, you know, the prestigious people that everybody likes. And then after they've served for a little while, the people who got the awards will be asked to serve on the committee to preside over further elimination, so that the award winners are the ones who will be picking the winners. It gets a little incestuous that way,
well,
but it's probably the best way to create, to bring in new blood all the time.
Well, that, and maybe not have the committee entirely made up of that. Maybe have a couple of members at large or something, you know, who could also...
Well, and then you also need a subcommittee of people who are actually administrating this stuff and making sure that it's, you know, purely, everything's above board. In other words, there's very little politics involved with it.
The whole issue of certification, think about, everybody says, well, if you go to a doctor, they have to be certified. Well, yeah, but if you read a book, that doesn't mean
that's
certified. You know,
the certification is by the organization, let's say, the American Medical Association.
I mean,
a doctor doesn't have to belong to it. He can just get his license.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So,
yes.
There are ways.
I mean, I like displaying and having my certificates of the various tarot courses I've attended, you know, I've participated in. Mm-hmm. I think that gives some legitimacy to, should anybody ask, you know, well, what makes you think you know all about this, you know? But it's not the same thing as having to go through a certification process, you know?
I'll be honest with you.
Process. And I have to say, you know, it was very arduous. It was for the Kaizen Youth Creativity Coaching. And I don't even remember my thesis as being this involved.
Yeah.
Because her, it's with her personality. It's whether she wanted you or didn't want you.
Mm-hmm.
She gave some people a harder time than others.
Right.
How come I got mine and others are still waiting to get theirs? They're just as good as me. It's a personality thing.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
I persevered, you know. I'm sure she would have loved for me to have dropped out. But I persevered, and you know, eventually I got it. And and that's what I'm afraid of with all of this.
There's a movie out that's based on a true story about a brilliant physicist, Chinese physicist.
Oh yes, I saw it. You went crazy.
Oh, Dark Matter.
Dark matter, yes.
Oh, I have that on my list. Yeah.
Okay, so basically, it's what happens is he goes through the PhD program in America, not knowing that the PhD program in America is a vanity contest.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't assuage the vanity of the people on your committee,
mm-hmm.
you don't get doctorated.
Mm-hmm.
You don't complete the program. So here he was, one of the most brilliant people I've ever been through, but he didn't know how the system worked. And though he was kind of given little clues along the way, he was also given contradictory messages, you know, like, oh yeah, we don't mind people being challenged, you know, people challenging us. So he went ahead and he put forth his mathematical theory of dark matter, which completely revolutionizes physics. And of course, his professor, who's totally into his own thing, which had nothing to do with dark matter, was completely pissed off.
Well, that is
jealousy. Yeah, he was.
That's like de rigueur. He really missed a lot of social cues.
That he went off and became very isolated. He was already isolated. Ended up not getting by and getting a gun and killing his professor.
David Foster Wallace writes about having a nervous breakdown at his doctorate thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I don't wish that certification type things in terms of tarot. I think that'll always be a sub theme in tarot, but I don't want to see it standardized.
You know, it's a huge psychological game.
Huh?
A huge psychological game.
Yeah.
Listen, guys, I'm not. Bye.
Bye, David.
I'm becoming a holy anorexic. I need to eat something.
Right.
I don't blame you, David.
I'm a diabetic holy anorexic.
We're actually past our time. Has anybody got anything they want to say in closing?
Yeah. Do we have to edit this part out of the conversation that's been recording now?
Probably we should.
About
the certifications and whatnot.
Has left the conference.
It's probably not true. That's it. We got recorded.
Hey, it's just our opinion. I mean, who's
wait a minute. I'll do the official disclaimer so we can leave it in. The opinions expressed in this recording are not necessarily those of the producers.
Nor are they necessarily those of the speakers.
We're all full of caca. Okay.
All I know.
After all, we just got the
doc. That's right.
Yeah, we are just going through this. This is the doc's influence.
Bye-bye.
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 I'm going to stop the recording. Okay.